This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. In August, Western Michigan University came under the leadership of a new president. Edward Montgomery took over after John Dunn retired. We're going to discuss what he's been working on and plans formulating for the future over those past 8 months. Dr. Montgomery, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
We're also joined today by Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Kayla Miller.
Glad to be here, too.
You have announced, or the university has announced, some training for employees related to Title IX, also a new campus climate survey that's been done in the past. Is this in response to what's been going on at Michigan State with the scandals involving the sexual abuse and the fact that it didn't get reported in a way that it should have?
Actually, the campus started to revise and look at its sexual assault policies back in 2014, before all this came to attention. We wanted to look at our practices, and we retained Pepper Hamilton to come in and do an audit of what our procedures were, whether we had the resources to protect our students and make sure that people were aware of the policies. We hired a Title IX coordinator dedicated to that task as a result of that. We then went through a comprehensive revision of our policies and procedures so to make sure that all our employees were aware of their obligations, make sure that students knew where to go for resources and to get help. And we put that into place, and we did a campus survey. All this was done in 2015, again, before the MSU stuff became on the media's attention. So we have a history of paying attention to this issue. We have a history of trying to revise our practices, but you never can rest. You're only as good as what you've done today, and so we want to keep working at it. We're in the midst of a new campus survey, as you mentioned, to see what the results of the community are, see what awareness is, see if people are aware of resources, and so forth. And we've come out with a new updated training module so that people can, again, learn about the procedures and practices that are relevant to try and keep us as safe as possible.
When you do look at Michigan State, though, does it seem that the problem was, you know, protocols, that there should have been people who took information and got it to somewhere else, and that the reporting somewhere along the line fell down? When you see that as, you know, the president of a university in the same state, do you say we've got to make sure that people understand that if this information comes across their desk, there's a certain procedure they go through?
Well, first and foremost, it was Larry Nassar, who was the perpetrator of these crimes against these young women. Then the question was, were there things that campuses could put in place so that if that kind of incidents wouldn't continue, if it occurred, that would deter people from even thinking about doing it to begin with? And that's what we've been trying to focus on, is to make sure that we set a clear and unambiguous tone that that's not what we are as a campus, that's not what we tolerate as a campus, and then to make sure that people have procedures in place that if something like this were to occur, it gets reported and it gets properly dealt with.
Does that also apply for, you know, students themselves? Because, you know, campus sexual assault among students is also a problem.
Absolutely. Most sexual assaults on our campus, people know the perpetrator of the crime. It's often, and so students need to know where they can go for help. They should know how to proceed in terms of getting help from each other. We're also trying to train students on bystander intervention so that, again, the best protection is to try and make sure it never happens to begin with. And so we've been training, providing help for young men to think about how to step in, how to prevent things from escalating. And so our Heroes program has been part of that kind of effort as well.
Kayla?
Yeah, I'm wondering how you see transparency as high into the administration. How does that play a role in the issue?
Well, if you're saying when an incident occurs, should people report that incident? Is there a clear expectation from all parties about reporting that incident? Then I think the answer is absolutely yes, it should be. Obviously, when you parties have privacy rights, and so you want to be respectful of what the survivor is going through and their rights to privacy. But we as a system have to be vigorous in enforcing these things.
Okay, because obviously at Michigan State it was Larry Nassar, we agree, but it was knowledge of what Larry Nassar was doing up as high. I mean, you see the president being forced to resign and this dean now having criminal charges being faced. So it is that level of people knowing but not doing anything. And so transparency.
Yeah. I mean, our trustees came and have done another audit. They had independent conversations with the people who were on the ground to make sure that they felt free to report, to use their professional judgment in terms of how to pursue cases, that the police were properly involved when they should be involved. And again, that everybody felt free to do the job without any outside interference. They were, I think, satisfied that we have those procedures in place. Our team, our legal counsel and our Title IX coordinator actually went and briefed the legislature on our procedures. And so I think that was very helpful to Senator O'Brien and Senator Shoemaker, who wanted to know what campus's procedures are. Again, we came out well so far, but we can't rest on this. It's not a time to crow. We have to keep being vigilant.
Any results yet from the survey?
I have not seen any result from the survey yet. We're hoping in the next, in the fall semester.
Kayla?
Yeah, so I wanted to talk with you during your State of the University address and your inauguration and since then as well. Increasing retention and graduation rates has been a huge emphasis that you've placed in multiple speeches and that sort of thing, as well as the Transformational Initiatives Fund. And in addition, so why has this been such a big emphasis for you coming in as a new president?
Well, I think we, I think we should be enormously proud that Western has had a tradition of serving the men and women, the sons and daughters of the state of Michigan, and increasingly of the region. Being accessible to them is an important thing for a public university, and I think we're really proud to try and honor that commitment. But getting people in the door isn't sufficient if they can't succeed and walk out with a diploma. And so a part of, I think, honoring our commitment to be an accessible university is to work in partnership with the student. We can't do it for them. We have to work in partnership with the student to make sure that they have the resources to succeed. Part of our being an accessible campus means that we get a lot of first-generation students. And when you're a first-generation student coming onto a college campus, it is often a strange new world. There are rules and procedures. Where do you go for help? Can you get help? How do you get connected? And so part of what we're trying to do is to build those bonds, to integrate people into the community. When people feel part of a community, then they're more likely to persist when things go wrong. And they all go wrong. We can all remember the test we didn't do as well, and we can all remember hassles with a roommate or various other things that are part of that college experience. But if you're part of a network, then you're more likely to keep at it. When we see it with our athletes, we see it with our CETA scholars, we see it in other programs where students who are part of a network, part of a learning community, stick with it. And so what we're trying to do is, how do we build that gel? How do we build those connections so that students stay with it when the times get tough, have some grit to get over that, and then come out at the end? I don't want to have a whole series of students who come to the campus and then 4 years later leave with nothing but debt. That's not success. Success is walking out with a degree that they earned.
And from a handful of people on campus, I've heard the term Montgomery effect, this positive inspiration sort of thing that you've brought to campus in helping people increase their graduation rates and helping students succeed. So what's your response to that?
It's a Western effect. I came to this campus have had the opportunity to meet with the faculty and the staff and to talk to alumni. And this is a community that is enormously proud of this campus and will tell you again and again what a special place it has played in their lives, whether they're as professionals or whether they're students and alums. And so all we're doing here is unleashing what has already been at place, what has been part of the tradition of the campus, and trying to take those things which we have done in pockets and take it to scale. And so it's not this is not something new. We have evidence on our own campus. We have programs on our own campus, and we've done these living communities for about 1,600 students. We're going to do it for all 5,000 incoming students. That's what we're doing that's different. It's just taking those practices and taking them to scale.
I want to go back to what you said about networks. Is what you're talking about there trying to find something that maybe every student can latch onto? They may not be an athlete, They may not be in a fraternity. They were not necessarily part of the CETA Scholars Program. But you want to find somewhere where they connect to students who have some things in common with them. Is that the idea?
Yes. We all discover or have a passion. And part of these learning communities, sometimes it's an academic. You're into your major. Sometimes you're into helping people who are poor or helping people learn to read, or you have a passion for animals, or it's music, or a whole variety of things. It's trying to figure out that those passions, connect people to their passions, and then put them in a community of people who have those shared experiences with them. And if they can turn to George or Billy or Mary and say, that we have something together. And think back at your own college experiences. What you remember, yes, you remember some of the classes, but a lot of what you remember is sitting around the dorm room or sitting around the fraternity or sitting around the cafeteria, just chewing the fat with your friends. And those are the stories that amuse you, but they're also the stories that kept you coming back and to be part of that community. And again, we want to let students pick their own, but the mentor's job is to help guide them. Where are those resources?
So to kind of switch gears, kind of back to your State of the University address, the Faculty Association president said that the faculty felt like you were, quote, down in the trenches with them. And so why is that important to increase relations between the administration and the faculty?
Well, one, universities run on the principle of shared governance. The active engagement of faculty and staff in the programs and the activities of the campus. That's the DNA of what universities are about. And so we believe in that. We have to have that strong. As part of that is recognizing that there are lots of talented people on this campus, 6,000 employees or so. Why not engage them with their ideas and their expertise and their knowledge and their practice in getting ideas about what we can do, what we shouldn't do, what works, what doesn't work, rather than assuming that one or two administrators have all the knowledge. Let's unleash the 6,000 who to have their knowledge and to apply that and to take their passions. Many of whom were already very actively engaged, but we want to be purposeful about making sure they're part of our process.
Well, in your State of the University address, you talked about being more entrepreneurial, being willing to take risks. But I have to ask you, what is an acceptable level of risk when we're talking about taxpayer dollars, we're talking about money which students and their families have paid in tuition? You also have to be good stewards of the money. So where is the right balance between risk and also, making sure that you value the dollars you receive?
Sure. The decision to invest in peer mentors is risking some finances of the campus on an experiment to see whether we can increase retention and graduation rates. In making that judgment that that's worth doing, we first looked at what is the best practices and what is the evidence from other universities and our own university about what are the elements that keep students graduating or in school and moving along. Peer mentors in case after case after case came out as a clear, unambiguous evidence in favor that people who are part of learning communities have graduation rates in the 10 to 15% percentage points higher than those who are not part of those communities. So it's a risk. We're going to take a chance, and we're saying based on what evidence and research has showed us that it's a calculated risk that has some backing. It's worked on other campuses. It worked on this campus at smaller scale, and we're betting we can go to scale. I would argue that kind of risk taking is a prudent use of the taxpayer dollars. There are other things that if you don't have any basis and you just wake up in the morning and you say, I heard on the radio or TV, or I met my friend George down at the donut shop and he had this idea and then we were investing money, then you would have to say that probably isn't the prudent use of the campus dollars. So we want to go for those things which have a proven track record and that promise to pay off on the dimensions that we care about.
Well, let me ask you about another program here, which you've invested some money in, which is drawn maybe a little bit of questioning, and that's the eSports initiative. How did you decide that this was something that the university should be involved in?
Again, both the eSports initiative and the Success WMU, or the Retention Graduation Initiative, were the results of faculty and staff ideas. We had a call for proposals, and there were groups of faculty and staff. I think we got 60 different proposals and ideas across the campus. Some of them had a commonality, and we bundled them together. I think 14 different proposals came at different aspects of Success WMU. And then there were another set of proposals that suggested esports. I was initially skeptical, to be perfectly honest with you, about that as an initiative. But then they started talking about, well, what have we seen in terms of this activity and its popularity amongst the demographic which makes up college students, sort of 16 to 25-year-old. And what you see is this is one of the fastest-growing participatory activities for that age group. We see that in terms of viewing it. So there's people who want to play it, and then there are people who want to watch other people playing it. More people watched League of Legends, which is one of the games that they play. Had to learn that. more people watched the League of Legends Championship than watched any major league sports activity other than the Super Bowl. So that's more than watched the World Series, more than the NBA championship, more than the NHL championship. So students are coming out and watching this. You see teams like the New England Patriots and others investing in esports as an entertainment activity. So again, if part of your objective is here is twofold. I want to figure out how students can find community. Some find their passion around different activities. Here's one that is clearly relevant for the demographic, it's growing in popularity. And then the third element, which we're trying to build into this thing, is can we build an academic connection? Because this is an industry which right now is about a $2 billion industry, but growing hand over fist. That industry makes these games, and what goes into making these games? Well, there's some electrical engineering, there's some computer science. But there's also some storytelling, which comes out of a combination of psychology, comes out of some history, because people want realistic aspects, and then you have to understand human dimension, human behavior, human interaction with that. Well, that sounds like a cross-disciplinary, multidisciplinary potential avenue. And so what we're trying to do is, yes, we're going to have the game, but we're trying to link faculty in to so we can think about how we could develop courses, and maybe at some point, maybe even a major, around having students take that passion and then translate it into an academic component.
Kayla?
So the university has faced some criticism after that initiative was launched. So how do you see this program in relation to that notion that, you know, college students aren't adults or that we're not moving in the right direction?
Well, college students, 18-year-olds, 20-year-olds, 25-year-olds have passions, as do 45-year-olds. You go to a football game and you see men of 50 years old painting their faces green and white at the Eagles and flapping their arms up and down. Is that a mature individual, or is that a passionate fan who found something that they love? And so people show their passion in a whole variety of different ways. Some do it around sports, some do it around music, some do it around plays, some do it around history, some do it around volunteering. Our job, in some sense, is to help them ignite those passions, to channel those passions into something that makes them continue in the academic vein, and that they come out at the end with a degree. So just as we have teams and bands and clubs, this is another one that fits in that. Is it for everybody? Absolutely not. It'll be for some people. And to a degree, it attracts. And I'm surprised. I'm getting emails from 18-year-olds. I hear about your team. Can I come and participate? We're running an experiment to see if it'll take off.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Western Michigan University President Edward Montgomery, also joined today by Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Kayla Miller. In your State of the University address, you said the university is going to have to find some other revenue, that you can't just rely on tuition dollars anymore. You can't just rely on tax dollars that come from the state. So where else do you go? And that would seem to be private money. So how do you raise it?
So, I mean, I think you have to have two things. One, there are three pots of resources that you can think about, which are different than the traditional student and their tuition payment. The first, obviously, is philanthropy from private donors and from foundations or corporations. And so part of that is how do we present our case to our community that we are a valuable proposition to invest in. Not only do they have good memories themselves, but being part of supporting that campus mission is a way of paying it forward. It's a way of continuing to affect outcomes in ways that they care about. We all have private philanthropy that we care about. Some people care about animals. Some people care about their church. Some people care about various different diseases. We care, and we give in part because of how it makes us feel, and that we're hoped to be part of something that's bigger than us. And that's the proposition we are trying to do as a campus, is to make that statement, to make that communication. And part of the reason we were hiring a vice president for marketing is so that we can broaden that reach, get the word out about all of the ways in which the campus is making a difference, not only in our students' lives, but in our community and impacting it, and to help establish the notion that supporters who are interested, if they're interested in economic development, they should support the campus. If they're interested in new discoveries in science, they should support the campus. If they're interested in students getting ahead and providing opportunities, they could invest in the campus. If they're interested in making sure that we continue to provide health care or provide culture, investing in the campus is a good thing to do. And so that's part of the communication on that side. We've hired brought in a new vice president for research, and she's going and working with the faculty to try and make sure that our faculty have the support they need to go out after grants. There are grants from the federal government, NIH, NSF, various other funding sources like that. They're grants from foundations. And so she's working with the faculty. She's meeting with the deans of research. She's been talking to our medical school. We have research active people on this campus. How do we energize them? How do we put them together in ways that allow us to get even more grants? That's another source of support from that. And then the third avenue is new programs. New kinds of entrepreneurial activities. There might be people who don't necessarily want a full degree, but they want some top-ups to the training they already had. Executive education, if you will, or continuing education. We see that in the education field. Principals and teachers do that, but there are lots of other fields where that's an avenue. And so do we have those kinds of offerings which could both generate revenues, provide learning and training for our community, and help the university out?
Wondering how you make sure that you don't get in a situation where the donations drive programs, because that becomes a concern. There are things that people really like to give money to. Oftentimes it's buildings because they can see their name. But, you know, how do you funnel the money in such a way that it's driving the mission, as opposed to, you know, that you take the money and then that determines what you do as a university?
Yeah, I mean, most philanthropy is driven by the donor's personal passions. So the notion that I could convince you who cares deeply about, maybe you care about green buildings, that I could convince you to give all those dollars to a scholarship for a student, there's probably only limited ability to change you away from the things that you're a passion. The question is, how do I ignite that passion? How do I find others who might be interested in schooling or in scholarships and things like that, and not try and take a donor far away? But we want to make sure in all of our conversation with donor that we're laser focused on what are the campus's priorities. The ways that you can help us is not to build a Taj Mahal that is of no use to our students, our faculty, and our staff. The way you can help us, if you wanted to build a physical structure, South Campus is a renovation. We need a new face for that campus. And so how do we channel your desire for a building or some brick and mortar that you would like your name on into a project that actually is consistent with the mission of the campus rather than something that would just stand as a monument to you but not be of any utility to the campus?
So I'm wondering, you brought up Stadium Drive and that South neighborhood. So how do you see improvements to the physical campus, the buildings, the way it looks, that sort of thing, as a good use of money to make Western the school of choice, as you've said?
Well, there are two things. There's what does the external look of the buildings from the outside say about the campus and attract people to coming? When people in this community or this neighborhood or this state come to Kalamazoo, more than likely they're going to drive down Stadium Drive. And as they come into town and it's the gateway to downtown Kalamazoo, the question is, does that visual image entice you to say, oh, let me move into that campus, let me think about going into that campus, or does this entice you to let me keep on driving? And the more, like a good storefront, like an attractive property, like what we're doing downtown, where they've renovated a lot of the properties and made it a place that's more welcoming for young professionals and others to come and hang out and be part of the community, we want that to be a continuous thing and start up at the college area. So us and K College and so forth have a district that makes this town and our campus an attractive place. But we're not just building buildings who are pretty on the outside. What goes on the inside has to be part of serving our vital mission. So to the degree they're residence halls, they are helping our students find and have a good place to live. And what do we know about residence halls? We know that students who live on campus are more likely to stay. They're more likely to return on their second year, more likely to return on the third year. So having attractive capacity for students who want to stay on campus is a part of how do we promote graduation rates. So what goes on the inside is as important as what the image is on the outside, and they can work together.
And to kind of switch gears a little bit up the road, so MDOT's working on that Howard Stadium Drive intersection, and there's been some criticism of the bike access and pedestrian and bicyclist access. And so how do you see improvements to getting bicyclists and pedestrians from downtown to Western's campus?
Yeah, I think they're going to put a sidewalk on the other side of the road is my understanding. That's a step. I think, the long run vision, if I were king, I'd love Stadium Drive to have sort of a boulevard feel that slows people down a little bit, that has bike lanes and pedestrian ways to walk. In some sense, the ideal for me would be that the connection between downtown and the campuses would be almost seamless, that people would see this as all part of one big community with a set of activities where what goes on downtown reinforces the campus and what goes on campus reinforces what's going on downtown. And part of that is to make it more pedestrian friendly. Part of that is to make it more visually friendly ways to move people around.
So before we wrap up, it's been 8 months since you started the job. What have you learned in that time about being a university president?
It's a big job, but it's a fun job. You get the opportunity to meet students and faculty and to share their passion. I went to a Pakistani Day event, and the students were so proud to talk about their culture and share their food and dances and so forth, and they're just numbers of activities like that, whether it's with our sports teams or our students or the band or the faculty. And so getting to be part of that is an incredibly exciting experience. So I'm really happy to be here.
Western Michigan University President Edward Montgomery, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And we also want to thank Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Kayla Miller.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
West Southwest can be heard on Mondays and Thursdays at 9:30 in the morning, with a rebroadcast at 3:30 in the afternoon both days. You can find extended versions of some interviews and archived programs at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.